Anyway, the way I like to enter into this discussion, this time of message, being able to really come together as a congregation, as a people of faith, is I really want to figure out how we approach Scripture here. How do we look at Scripture at Covenant Christian Church? There are those who like to look at it as a literal text, something we have to look at word for word, and it tells us one thing, and we have to take it at that. But here we're a little more forward thinking. I think that at Covenant Christian Church, we see it as more of a message that needs to be looked at, dissected, needs to really be engaged and wrestled with, so that one bit of Scripture can come up with lots and lots and lots of different meanings. And that is very true. That's what we do. That's not just Christianity that focuses on this. Every religious tradition at its core and every scriptures, whether it be the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita in Hinduism, or the Pali Canon, or the Tipitaka Tales in Buddhism, all right? All of those come to it with a sense that you look at it and try to understand what they're trying to say. Not to look at them as literal pieces. The Quran in Islam and even the Torah in Judaism. None of those ask you to say this is a literal text, and that you are to take it word for word, and there's one meaning that comes out of it. We in Christianity, we're forward-thinking people, at least here at Covenant, so we like to understand the meaning behind what is there. So there's lots of different things, especially in today's story. We've taken a Matthew text, okay, and we've got to understand who Matthew is, all right? Matthew has his own understanding, his own perspective, all right? We're going to be talking about a very popular text, one that we talked about in Children's Moment, where Peter actually gets out of the boat and walks on water because Jesus is right there with him. All right, so obviously we're going to be discussing faith. All right, but I picked Matthew's verse because if I would have picked Mark's verse, Peter wouldn't be there. Peter would be in the boat, staying there until Jesus got there. All right, so there's a lot of things that we look at. And so there's an understanding that we have to move forward. So let's go ahead and read what the scripture says. This is coming from Matthew. And it is chapter 14, verses 22 through 33. Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side, while he also dismissed the crowd, because this came right after the feeding of the 5,000. We talked about that last week. The crowd was there. Everybody was moved. He healed lots of people. He preached, and then he said, "You may go." All right? After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, which is the earliest mornings of the hour, usually 3 to 6 in the morning, he went out and walked on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it is you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." So we're talking about faith today. All right. And there's a lot of ways I can take this. All right. First of all, I think the clearest thing I could talk about would be Peter. Right. Peter saying, "Hey, Jesus, can I come out there with you?" Right. I got to have faith to be able to do it. I mean, I'm not just going to step down into the water. Right. And Jesus said, "Come on." So we could talk about Peter. Very simple. All right. Faith. Another group we could talk about, the disciples. They stayed in the boat. We could talk about faith as being patient, okay? Waiting for Jesus to come to them, to show them the way, to be a guide. That's another thing we could talk about. I'm not talking about that today. I'm talking about something else that is in this scripture that, you know, for the most part, we missed. In the very beginning, Jesus told the disciples, said, go on, just head on over, see a Galilee, get out on the other side, I'll meet you there. Okay? And he also dismissed the 5,000 plus that he had just fed. We know also, we talked about last week, that before the meeting of the 5,000 during that precious day, he had just found out that John the Baptist, his colleague, his friend, his relative, had just died. So what did he do? He climbed a mountain. He went to pray. He went to meditate. He went to take time for himself, having faith. Sure, we could talk about Peter. We could have fun with some of those titles that we can come up. I actually came up with a few of them myself. I said, keep your eyes on Jesus and you stay afloat. Or, uh-oh, ye of little faith. Or, down with the ship. All right, those are some fun things we could have. We could even say, staying faithful in the midst of chaos. Those are all very valid responses to this particular scripture. Or we could take more of an allegorical approach. You know, Jesus, you know, talking about who Jesus was and what he represented. Then talking about the boat and how it represented, you know, Jerusalem and the disciples and who they were and Peter. So looking at it in the first century and how that took place. We could do that. I'm not going there. A little more simple. What did Jesus do? He went to be alone. He went to be by himself. To be with God. To be faithful. To find his faith. One of the things that brought me here was if you were here on Friday night with Chris, with the Reverend Chris Furr, who we're going to look at as being our next minister. One of the questions was posed to him, asking him, how can we move forward at Covenant? How can we bring people to us? One of the things that I got from it was he said, we must be individuals who understand our faith. Therefore, if we know who we are, if we know what we believe, if we know why we believe and understand it, it will show out there. People will see who we are. And they'll say, wow, you're so confident. You're so understanding. You have it all together. How'd that come about? Well, I've worked on it myself, and Covenant Christian Church has helped me figure it out. So that's why I think we, as a congregation, need to talk about it today. What do? Be quiet. Be in a relationship with God. Pray. So, moving forward, trying to understand what we're doing here, being quiet, taking time to meditate, taking time to pray, in this world, in this culture, in this day and age, is impossible. There are distractions everywhere. It could be work. It could be our children. It could be our friends, our neighbors. It could be the illness that is dealing with or taking over somebody's life. Distractions are everywhere. They move us away from those still small moments. So we need to find ways of getting back to it. Even religion at its core can move us away from a spiritual understanding of ourselves. There are people who say that some people just come through the doors, they go through the motions, they perform the practices and rituals, but they don't know why. Something I've used with the youth numerous times is this simple teenager with a camera going around asking his friends, what is your religion and why? Simple question, right? They can tell you what their religion is, but why they believe it? Oh, my mom and dad brought me up in this religion. Or, my grandfather was a minister. They don't know why. They just are. So religion, doing the practices and rituals, sometimes can get in our way and distract us at times from really understanding who we are and our own faith. So we need to be able to understand that. So, how do we make time to be quiet, to be alone? It's just something we have to be persistent about. But it's kind of hard too, because being quiet and being alone is hard. Because once you're quiet and once you're alone, you've got to deal with some really big things. It's not just plain and simple. I've made a list, and it's actually a really long list, but I'm going to go over all of them. The things that when we prepare ourselves to actually be silent and to be quiet, the things we have to work with and the things we have to deal with. We have to deal with our weaknesses, our sin, our infidelities, lies, rationalizations, a constant avoiding of the truth. We have to deal with our fear. We have to sit with the fact that we are alone, that we will end up alone, that we may end up unloved and not worth loving. Our mortality. We have to sit with the fact that one day we will die and that already our bodies are aging. Our options are narrowing down, that our best dreams will never be realized. We have to sit with our jealousy, our angers, our bitterness, that life has not been fair to us, that others have things that we don't have or that I don't have. We have to sit with the belief that we never forgiven them or made peaces with our losses. Our ambitions, we have to sit with those. We have to sit with our need to succeed, our need to create some immortality of whatever kind for ourselves before we die. We have to sit with our sicknesses. We have to sit with our addictions. The fact that we are not whole, that inside each one of us, there are dark corners and dark demons that do not show up on our photographs or in our resumes or in things that our friends know about us. We have to sit in those quiet, peaceful places with our sensuality, our lust, laziness, our pathological need for distraction, our incapacity to sit still. Finally, we have to sit with our godlessness, that black hole of fear, insecurity, chaos, and emptiness that resides within each of us. So being alone and being quiet has its own fears, its own things that says, I really don't want to do that. But it's what it takes to fully understand who you are. Studies have shown that if you were to marriage counseling, that if you were to have a spouse, a significant other, somebody with whom you can sit down and tell your deepest, darkest secrets to, and they'll listen, that's what it takes. To be vulnerable. To be at that place where you're not certain of what's going to happen. That's what it takes. And in those quiet moments, we have that opportunity. We have that opportunity to build our faith, to build our identity to who we are with God. God being that spouse, God being that person who you can share those things with, that can make you whole. That's what it takes. It's not easy. It's really hard. Some people, They don't think they can deal with it. They don't think they can move that far. Our world, a Pew Research study just a couple years ago, came out and said 1 in 5 Americans, not religious, not religious. Most of them identifying as agnostic. 1 in 3 if you're 18 to 24, 1 in 3. Most of them have a sense that, you know what, I don't have time to figure out if God exists. I don't have time. I don't know. I can't do it. Because it's hard. And some people who come into a religious institution, into a church in these aisles, still don't do it. Because it's hard. But we've got to try to build that relationship, that opportunity, that time to be quiet, that time to sit with God and meditate, to pray, whatever it may be. God can be our spouse. Other studies have showed Buddhist monks who have meditated for thousands of hours. They've put little electrodes on their heads. Of course, they shave their heads, so it makes it a lot easier. But anyway, they've monitored the neural pathways in their brains. And after meditating for thousands of hours, contemplating these same things that we will have to deal with if we sit down in this quiet, and their neural pathways have changed to a point that their brain is totally different. It doesn't look like the brains that we have. And they ask these monks, after all these thousands of hours of meditating, of being quiet and being still, what does life feel like? We think it's chaos. I think it's chaos. I think there's so much out there that it is. But you ask them, complete wholeness, oneness, a oneness with the universe. Or you can look at it as a oneness with God, with the divine. It's something that we need to work on. So yeah, I could look at Peter and his faith in Jesus. I could look at the disciples and their faith. But the truth is, what did God do? What did Jesus do in that very moment? He sat down. He climbed a mountain and he prayed. He meditated. He tried to understand who he was, what he was supposed to do, why he was here, and building a relationship where he can tell God anything, those deepest, darkest secrets and those fears. And I think that's what we should do. To relate to God in this way is to have faith. Sharing all of our secrets and fears in those lonely, private hours when there are just the two of us and nobody else is around. Having a faith in God like this can only lead us down a road to wholeness and health. One that I think that we as individuals should continue, and as a congregation, we should continue. Spiritual growth, fully understanding and realizing who you are in the presence of God.